And welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Hayomim Beis Perek Lamed Gimel, the 33rd chapter of the book of Divrei Hayomim, the second book of Divrei Hayomim. Our Perek deals on the topic of Menashe, the son of Yechizkiel HaMelech, and the grandson of Yechizkiel HaMelech, whose name is Amon. Our Perek is 25 psukim long, and its parallel parsha can be found in Melachim Beis Perek Chof Aleph. Let's take a look at it over here. We actually have more details here than we do in Sefer Melachim. It starts off in the first 9 psukim describing the kingdom of Menashe and all the terrible things he did. So we hear that he takes the throne at 22 years and he rules for a colossal 55 years. That's a very, very long kingship of Yerushalayim. But he does the bad in the eyes of Hashem. And we hear a description of all the different things that he does. So he builds the Bamos. He allows the rebuilding of the personal altars that Yechizkiel HaMelech had destroyed. And then he allows not only serving Hashem in different places, but he created the altars for Baal. And he planted Asherah trees. And he served all the hosts of the heavens. We did hear about descriptions of all the places that he made and all the altars he made and the places Hashem said should be my place. He brought his sons over the fire, so he's serving in the area of Geben Hinnom. That's the service of Molech, one of the local gods. And he also did Oinen Nichesh Kishef Ovi Yedoni, so searching out sorcerers and pulling up the dead, all kinds of things which the Torah specifically said he shouldn't. He put up a large image in the base of Migdash, in the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said, the epicenter of where Hashem's word is represented on the earth, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them not to do this. It's just a terrible situation all round. And it goes on to describe all these things. And in fact, not only did he do it himself, but he got the people of Yehuda to do the bad like the nations around them. So a few basic questions over here is there are extra details in Sefer Melachim Beis which tell us a few other things he did as well to add to this list. What are they? So one of them is that if you look in the Psukim over there, it says, V'gam dam noki shofach Menashe. He also murdered innocent blood. So the Mefarshim explained, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, tells us that he murdered many, many people for no reason, no cause. In fact, the Gemara goes on to say, not only did he murder innocent people, but he murdered Yeshayahu HaNavi. Yeshayahu HaNavi, if you remember, is his grandfather, actually. A terrible, terrible situation. Yeshayahu's daughter married Yechizkiel HaMelech, and Yechizkiel was going to die, and he prayed for tshuva. They had a child called Menashe, and he murdered his grandfather. Why did he do this? The Barbanel said, he explains that it's to avoid those who are moichichim, so those who rebuke him. He didn't like to hear people telling him that he was doing the wrong thing, so his easiest way of escaping that was to kill them. Terrible, terrible situation. The Barbanel also adds that based on the Psukim, the Barbanel quotes the Chazal from the Psukim in Melachim, that he also removed the Eish Tamid. He removed the constant fire from the times that Beis HaMikdash was started, in the times of Shlomo HaMelech, till now, this fire was now removed and extinguished by Menashe. Really terrible set of sins. And in fact, so terrible is that if you actually read Sefer Yirmiyahu Navi, one of the last Nevi'im during the first Beis HaMikdash reign, in Perek Tezvov, Popsukim Gimel Tadadis, Upokarati Alehem Arba Mishpachos, Hashem is going to bring 4 different types of punishments. There's a cherev laroig, the sword to slay, there's a klovim nischov, the dogs to drag, there's a oifa shamayim, there's bema zaoritz leachol ola hashchis, the birds and the beasts to eat, destroy and devour. Why on a satim lezaavah, I'm going to place them to be a horror, lechom avlechos oritz, biglal Menashe ben Yechizkiyahu melech Yehuda asher asav Yerushalayim, because of everything Menashe did in Yerushalayim. It's very, very significant. And this is a terrible, terrible moment because of his actions, and what he did was so negative. There was no king who was as negative as him, as Melachim tells us, before him. And this is a very, very terrible, terrible moment in national Jewish history. So what happens is now we hear about a new part of the story which we don't actually hear about in Sefer Melachim. And that is Psukim Yud to Yud Gimel, where we talked about how because he didn't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the soldiers who take him to Babel. Now, it's actually a little unclear because it's the soldiers of Ashur, which is Assyria, they take him to Babylon. Most of the Mefarshim understand that he was really taken to Assyria. Babylon was a sort of a smaller province. It was an upstart nation at this point in time. He was taken to Assyria, and yeah, and they bring him in chains, and he, at this point, and when they were hurting him, which the Chazal explained that he was being boiled alive in a cauldron, so as he was being boiled alive, he was humbled in front of the God of his fathers, and he cried out to Hashem, and Hashem listened to him, and Hashem miraculously brings him back to Yerushalayim, and Menashe knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in fact the true king. We then hear about the actions he takes after he does teshuvah from Sukkim Yudalad to Yudzayin. We hear that he builds the wall of Yerushalayim, or takes away all of the Avodah Zorahs, and he throws them out of Yerushalayim, and he did all the Mizbechos, and he builds the Mizbech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he brings sacrifices on it, and he does not serve Avodah Zorah, but the people are still sacrificing on the Bamos, on their personal altars to Hashem. So a few things just to question over here is that, you know, did he really do teshuva? Was his teshuva accepted? So on the one hand, you'll say, well, it seems like he's accepted. It was accepted because Hashem brought him back to Yerushalayim. On the other hand, the Sefer Melachim does not actually talk about this incident whatsoever. We don't hear about the teshuva and the reform and his being taken captive and the big good things he did afterwards. We don't hear about it whatsoever in Sefer Melachim. So how do we put the two together? So the seeming contradiction between Sefer Melachim and Sefer Divrei Hayamim is actually, it continues in posterity in a machlokes. If you look at the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, on Daf Tzadi Amud Aleph tells us that there are three kings who lost their chelik in the Olam Haba, in the world to come. One of them was Yerovam, the other one was Achav, and the other one was Menashe. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and he says, "Yeah, Menashe yesh lechelek l'olam haba." Why? Because it says that he did teshuvah. He begged for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem brought him back on his throne. So it sounds like Hashem accepted his teshuvah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that in fact they both were looking. Both the Chachamim felt that Menashe lost his chelek l'olam haba, and the Andrew Yehuda were looking at the same pasuk, the pasuk that we just looked at in Yirmiyahu Anavi, which describes that it was because of Menashe. What does it mean because of Menashe? Does it mean that because his teshuvah was insincere and that's why he did not get to Olam Haba, or was it because only he did teshuvah but not the rest of his generation did teshuvah as well? So there's a debate that is very inherent in the two versions that Nach present of the Menashe story, which are reflected in the two perspectives in the Mishnah as to whether this was in fact a sincere teshuvah or was it a teshuvah which enabled him to get to Olam Haba. Basic question is, how could somebody so bad do teshuvah? How is it possible for somebody to come back that far? So if you recall, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Yudam and Aleph going over to Mabeis describes that Chizkiyahu HaMelech himself was in a similar kind of situation, not because he was bad, but because he had made a bad decision. He decided not to have children because he foresaw that he would have a Menashe. And because of that, death was decreed upon him. He got very sick around the time of the siege of Yerushalayim, at which time Yeshayahu Anavi came to him and told him that he had no right to play God. He had none of the right to think about, you know, the future. He had to do what he needed to do. And he asked Yeshayahu if there was hope for him. And Yeshayahu said, no, the decree was sealed. Chizkiyahu refused to listen to Yeshayahu, turned his face to the wall and begged. And he said, I have a tradition from my father's house. I have a tradition from the house of David that if a person even has the sword upon their neck, they can still start a beg mercy from Hashem. And that's what happened to him. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was able to escape that decree, marry the daughter of Yeshayahu, in fact, ultimately have Menashe. Menashe is taking the very reason he was born, which is the idea that you can pray even when the cherev chada, that sharp sword, is munachas at tzavar shel adam, is put on the person's neck. He did exactly the same thing as his father did and ultimately did teshuvah. What's interesting is the Ralbag points out that is true, that you'll notice that he did kick out the Avodah Zorah and he didn't serve it in his lifetime, but the Bamos was still used. So it wasn't he wasn't able to do a full national changeover at all. In fact, Rashi points out that he threw the images out of the city, but he didn't fully destroy them, allowing ultimately his son, Amon, to fall prey to that. And because of this, ultimately sin himself. Exposure is dangerous. What one has in one's house or even outside one's house needs to be considered when one's bringing up children. And the one basic question that we have in this perek is, why did Melachim Beis leave out this section? Why don't we hear about the end of the story of Menashe, that he was captured, that he did teshuvah, that he came back, the spiritual reform? Why not? Now, Baranel in Sefer Melachim, in Perek Chav Gimel, at the very end, explains that Menashe's teshuvah was insincere, and it wasn't really fully true, even though outwardly it was. And that's why Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who was a prophet who could see to the inside workings of a person, ultimately excluded it, because he felt that it was insincere. Whereas Ezra HaSofer, who's writing Divrei Hayamim, who didn't have Nevuah, couldn't see the inner workings of a person, and therefore wrote down what actually happened. Another perspective that Abinel suggests is that it may have been true that he did teshuva, but the people of Israel did not do teshuva. And that being the case, it was not enough to take away the gezerah, the decree, on the nation of Israel at this point in time, and therefore it was omitted because ultimately the decree remained. Finally, we hear about in Psukim Yud Ches to Chof Hey, we hear about the next, or Yud Ches to Chof, we hear about the next section in his life, that that his tefillah is recorded, Menashe's tefillah is recorded in the and all the things that he did are recorded in the Divrei Chozai, and he passed away and he was buried, and his son Amon took his place. Do we have this tefillah? So the Malbim says, if you look in the Apocrypha, which is the external works that were not included in the canon of Tanakh, that are beyond the age of prophecy, there is what's called Tfilas Menashe, which is attributed to somebody who wrote it either from 2 centuries BCE or till 2 centuries Common Era. And the Malbim says it's apocrypha, it means nothing, it's chol. He says, but the Malbim does argue that if you open up your Tehillim, Perek or Mizmor, Samach Vav 66, that in fact is the Tefillah of Menashe. It's really beautiful to read it with that perspective. You hear some of the ideas. Have a sonu b'metzuda, santamu uka b'masnenu. You placed us in the hold, you constrained our loins. Hirkavto enosh l'roshenu, you placed people over us. Bonu bo'esh v'mayim v'totzienu l'revoya. You took us through water and fire, and you brought us out. Avoy be'secho bo'elois asherem l'chon nadarai. I'll come to your house, and I'll bring my korbonos in your place. Ashepotus v'osai v'diber pi b'tzarli. When my lips have uttered in distress, I'll bring you the burnt offerings of the fatlings in Keteris Elim Eser Bakor Imatodim Sela. So it's a very powerful mizmor. If you read the whole thing in that context with the Malbim, it is much more meaningful as well. Finally, the last and few psukim of our section are in our perek is Chof Aleph to Chof Hey, in which we hear about Amon, his son, who takes the rule. He's also 22 years when he takes the rule. He rules for 2 years only, and he also does bad in the eyes of Hashem, but he is not humbled like his father. He brings back all the bad things that Menashe had got rid of, and ultimately, his slaves rebelled against him and killed him in his own house. And Vayaku Ama Oretz as Kola Koishrim Ala Melech Amon, and the people killed the slaves who killed Amon, and they placed Yoshiyahu, his son, in his stead. What's the significance of the slaves killing him in his own house? So Abinel in Melachim points out that this man, Amon, the king of Israel, ignored his master in heaven, and his slaves ignored their master and killed him. It was Midah Keneged Midah. Why is it that the people placed the son Yoshiyahu on the throne? So Rav Bini Lau points out in his commentary to Sefer Yoshiyahu, it was in order to placate the Assyrian overlords. Because remember, Yechizkiel rebelled against the Assyrians by disconnecting himself culturally and politically from the north, and experienced the miracle of Sanherib's fate at the siege of Jerusalem. However, afterwards, Menashe, and this is the backstory, or sort of the motif of these prakim, is the geopolitics of the Middle East, that what Menashe is doing is not just simply culturally, but it's also politically. He's trying to align himself with Assyria and their culture in order to save grace and be able to protect himself. And similarly, Amon is doing the same thing as well. So when Amon is deposed of, very quickly the people put his son on the throne because they want to create a sense of stability in the face of Assyria's power. This concludes Perek Lamed Gimel. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.